Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk.
Good evening, everyone. Hope everybody's doing good. Getting close to summertime. I mean, summertime is coming to an end, so we're getting close to autumn, fall. Weather's going to be changing. So I kind of like that. That's my favorite time of the year. So let me get a few things ready here. Like I said, I'm not used to doing blog radio. It's probably, my third show, and learned a few things here and there. Let me get this chat open, see who's hanging out. And we're going to be, you know, visiting with you for a little while until my special guest, you know, gets to come in. You know, let him share his story. He's got an interesting story that he shares. And for those of you who tuned in for the first time, my name is Ben Carnes, and I go by Eagle Mans. Eagle Mans is not an Indian name. You know, I always want to make that clear. I started using the Eagle Mans about 4 years, 5 years ago, playing, you know, free online poker. And I kind of liked the name and kind of stayed with it. So I don't have anyone in the chat. And if this is your first time, we do have a chat. We can, you know, come in and visit with other listeners, share some thoughts and ideas. And from time to time, I'll check in there and see what's going on. And try to share some links. So let me see. Where are we at? September 5th. And I'll kind of give you guys a little bit of notice right now. I got to set it up. But I'm planning on doing a special program next week. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get, you know, do it at a proper time. But I'm going to do some checking and see if I can. But on September 11th. That is a birthday for Leonard Peltier. He's been in prison for over 3.5 decades for something the government even admits they cannot prove he did. And I'm going to have a few friends on, you know, so we can, you know, talk about Peltier's case and, you know, get some of your comments and see if we can, you know, get some updates about what's happening and everything. And we're going to encourage everybody, you know, to send him a card, birthday letter, and let him know that he's not forgotten. Let me check back over the chat. And I always got to switch back and forth between the two tabs because one shows the window. Okay, I'm also trying to find my calendar, see what day that is. And what I'll do with this blog show, you know, just kind of an opportunity to share my thoughts and ideas, share information and news, you know, dealing with the Choctaw Nation, but also, you know, like to share news that's going on with other Native people, you know, and make a connection of how relevant it is to Choctaw people. And at the same time, the issues that goes on to Choctaw people and other Native people are relevant to all others. Because, you know, we always say that, you know, we're all related. Life is interconnected. You know, we may have different color of skins. We have different way of praying, different way of speaking, different language. We all share this earth. We drink the same water. We eat a lot of the same foods. And we also breathe the same air. So, you know, why is it that, you know, we can't find a way, you know, to come together to bring a natural balance back into the way we should be living? You know, right now, this thing with Syria that's going on, I've read a bunch of stuff, seen some videos where they said the rebels were executing teenagers. And I looked at that video, I even watched it, and I thought, you know, there's a saying that if it's on the internet, it must be true. You know, have to be very careful about that. Because the Syrian government could easily take one of their soldiers, dress up as a rebel, and execute the teenagers. And maybe these teenagers are actually some of the rebels themselves. Or it could be vice versa. Maybe the rebels did execute these teenagers. I mean, we can't always be reactionary. We always need to be very critical in how we think and process the information that we hear and that we see. You know, we had a similar issue I'm going to talk about later on in the show, you know, about the information that we all receive. Let me check over here real quick. And one of these days, I'll get me a big enough screen I can have both tabs open at the same time. And don't have my guest calling in yet. Okay. We just recently had the Tuskahoma Labor Day Festival. And I went there this year and spent, you know, most of the time there. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, talk about how great it was. You know, I guess it could be, you know, good for some people. But, you know, I think that the festival that we have could even be greater, could even be more powerful, more stronger for our people. But instead, it's been set up and designed more as a tourist stopping point. You know, it helps the local economy generate a lot of revenue. Because, you know, thousands of people come there. They spend, you know, thousands of dollars into the small town of Clayton, Oklahoma, and every road that goes into there. And so, you know, they have a lot of country music that performs there, you know, some headliners. You know, they said a band, Perry's playing. I thought, well, that's fine. Who are they? I don't know anything about them. The only one I recognized was Don Williams. My parents listened to them. And I was kind of disappointed because I had started last year to try to, you know, get some effort started to bring in Native performers, because we had many of them that would deliver a message of sobriety, of hope, of traditions, you know, something that's empowering for our people. But, you know, some of the things I heard from some of the Choctaw people is that, you know, if they didn't have all these country and western singers coming, a lot of these non-natives wouldn't be showing up because they only show up for a free concert. You know, they could care less, you know, about our culture. They could care less about the stickball. They could care less about anything. They just want to see a free show, eat a corn dog, and ride free carnival rides. You know, that's all that is for them. So why is it we do not have an event that is set up for the Choctaw people in which we do get to come together? One of our relatives had said, you know, a lot has changed with the Labor Day Festival. And he came back, but he took it for what it was. It was a chance for a family reunion, a people's reunion, you know, to renew old friendships and find new friends. And that is a very important thing about Native people coming together. You know, it's not about issue about being racist. It is not that. You know, nobody ever misunderstand that. It's about, you know, having time where we can all come together, because we have like over 210,000 tribal members. We have about 72,000 tribal members in the state of Oklahoma. I believe there are several more in Dallas, Texas, California, Washington, and other places. So we can never have time that we can all come together. We would have a chance and opportunity to share our thoughts and mind with one another. Okay, somebody has sent me a private message, and it's all garbled. I think some of you guys have had that situation before, where you send a private message and all these symbols show up that it's not readable. Okay, let me check over in my, okay, no callers yet. But that is something that I hope that we can find a way to change in the coming years. You know, change is very difficult. You know, during this festival, I kept hearing, saying, you know, us Choctaw people, we like change. I kind of feel like that's not very true. They act like they want to talk about change, but when we try to change something, it ain't going to change. It ain't going to happen. That's just the way it is, and then we have to live with it. And you know what? I've heard that many times before, and I still try. You know, if we do what people tell us, then, you know, what good are we? And if we feel that this is something that's very important for our people that we need to do, then we need to keep doing it and doing it and doing it until we succeed. And I think I've used my life experiences at times before. Okay, let me see if I can get this message replied to. Probably hear me tapping on my keyboard. You know, sometimes we have to refresh these things just to even be able to read it. But hopefully that can be done and I can see what's being said. But, you know, the idea is to never, never, ever give up. And I feel like that we're reaching a critical point that we need to make an effort to change the way that the Choctaw Nation runs and operates. We have an election coming up for chief in 2 years. And it's all been said that, you know, the current chief, Greg Powell, is suffering from Alzheimer's or some stages of it, and that he will not be running again, and that Gary Batten, the vice chief, has been being groomed to take over. And it appears so, because he does quite a bit of talking at a lot of these events wherever he shows up. You know, Paul did talk a little bit, but most of it came from Batten. And I went to an event. You know, they have drawings for a new car and truck about every year. And do their drawings Monday morning where the councils, chief, vice chief, and all these dignitaries are present. And I thought, well, good, I want to hear what they got to say, you know, how things are going with the nation. And all I heard was how they all took turns patting each other on the back. And then he did the drawing and said, okay, now let's go eat. And I thought, dang, I sat there 45 minutes just to watch these guys pat each other on the back. The only news they shared was that they had purchased, I believe they said 44,000 acres of land between, I think they said, Antlers and Atoka, or Antlers and Daisy, I can't remember. And that they're still doing discussion and a negotiation for the Sardis Lake. But that was it. That was only maybe 3 to 5 minutes of spin on that. You know, I wanted to hear more news, but, you know, we didn't get that. You know, afterwards, you know, I seen a councilman. I went to mention to him about, you know, the country music, you know, can we get some native performers up there, you know, have our own people up for a role model. And I was told, well, I don't have anything to do with all that. I only care about the sports. And I said, well, you know, let me tell you something about how I feel about this. I said, you know, Choctaw people back in the day, we didn't have quarters. We didn't have signs. We didn't have announcers doing play-by-plays. I said, this doesn't feel like a Choctaw stickball game. This feels like something else, sports. This is not sport. This is something different. I said, we're losing the original intent of the stickball. And he seemed to be pretty upset, but he didn't say anything. And I said, okay, well, I'll see you later. And he just took off in his little golf cart. Guess he wanted to go get something to eat. So change. Yeah, they like change as long as they have it their way, but we want things to change for good, change for something culturally strong and affirmative, something that's breaking the mold, thinking outside the box. You know, one of my favorite sayings has always been, to free the land, we've got to first free our minds. And our minds has been colonized since, you know, the 1700s. Because even back then, that's when our people began adopting the ways of European immigrants who came here, you know, forming governments after their nature. And it continues on into this day. So, you know, people called me a troublemaker back in the 70s when I was like 16, 18 years old, and I was talking about sovereignty, American Indian Movement. And they told me I didn't know what I was talking about, that I was too young. And so I traveled the country. And they were involved with some demonstration, organizing, you know, working inside Native communities. You know, taking part in direct action to, you know, bring attention to theft of Native lands, defending spiritual rights of Native prisoners. And that was from, you know, 1972, and 3 years ago, came back home to Oklahoma. You know, there's a lot of things that went on for us in Colorado that I literally had the chance to spend a year in solitude with my two dogs on a mountain. And I had prayed about, you know, direction my life should take, because, you know, the things had gotten so hard financially that my wife and daughter had to go and stay with her father. And I was looking for an answer, and an answer came. My sister called and told me that we still had 5 acres of Indian land in near Brockenbrough inside Beaver's Den. And so we packed up, and I went back home. Came back home in time for an election. And after the election, I was talking to one person. And he said, you know, I went there to go vote. And I looked up on that list, people had signed in, and I saw my dad had signed in about a half hour earlier. He goes, man, I wish I could have been here earlier so I could have met my dad. He died 5 years ago, and I just missed him by 30 minutes. And I started hearing about other things where people were voting in two places. And the nature of this election that we have has been a bone of contention since the time of the termination period back in the 70s. So let me check my thing over here. Okay. We've got somebody here. I'm going to take a moment and get them on the phone with us here. Make sure I do this right. There it is. Okay. Hello, Randy. You're live on Hands Radio.
Oh, hello.
Hey, good to have you here. I've been looking forward to having you on the show so you can talk about what had happened back in the 70s. But maybe first, you know, introduce yourself a little bit, you know, who you are and what you're doing, and go ahead and talk about, tell your story. I want a lot of people to hear this.
Okay. I guess first of all, I have to say that my age is 76 years. And I need to say this because it'll explain some things of what's happened.
What's happened
in my lifetime?
In my lifetime.
For example, 1948. Harry J. W. Belvin was appointed by the President of the United States to be the Chief of the Choctaws. And at that time, I was 11 years old. And so in 1953, the federal government had a law passed. It was called Out of the House. House Complaint Resolution Number 108. And this was the Termination Act for all the Indian nations, tribes, and bands in the United States. Before this House concurrent bill was finished, there were 109 tribes that were terminated. And also there were, well, all the tribes were not on the list. It was a tribe by tribe. I don't know how you would express it, but each tribe was taken as individual. They worked with one tribe at a time. And for us Choctaws, the appointed chief, Harry J.W. Belvin, that I mentioned, who was appointed in 1948, in 1959, he was able to convince groups of Choctaws that he'd set up as, he called them county councils. And in our area, they met at Ida Bell, and very few people went, and that was one of the things that we have to fault ourselves about, because we didn't participate in the way that we should. But he got the councils, I can't remember whether they were 10 or 11, I believe they were 10, in the 10 counties of the Choctaw Nation, and they agreed with him that they would back him and what he called a self-determination kind of an action, when actually it was even named the 1959, or the Choctaw Termination Act of 1959. That was the name of the act itself. And he would go from place to place and say, and tell all the benefits that were going to be given once this was done. In 1967, so the act was about 8 years old, and they had not been able to terminate the Choctaws because they weren't able to sell all the properties that belonged to the Choctaws, so that was holding everybody up. In 1967, they sent out a letter to each of the enrolled members who were still living. And those persons were the only ones who were allowed to do any kind of responding to the government in those days. In 1967, my mother came to me when I was visiting her and asked me to talk about a letter that she had received. And the letter said that the Bureau of Indian Affairs was allowing everybody to remember that the Termination Act was in effect and to remind them that they had not completed selling the lands, and it was just for information only. And she said that I should do something about it, which was funny on a subject that was very, very serious, because I wasn't anything but a student. I was going to school in Tennessee at the time, and but she said that I was to do something about it, and I said, you know, Mother, this is something that lawyers and congressmen have to handle, because this comes from the federal government. And she kept saying to me, you can do something about it. You need to do something about it. And of course, we had a conversation, and I said, you know, why didn't the older people, the ones who got the letter, why didn't they rise up? And she said, because we're afraid, and we're waiting, and but you can do something. And I left my home and went back to school, but before I left, I talked to a man who worked for the church, a man by the name of Claude Gilbert. He lived in Idabel, and we belonged to the same denomination, and he had changed the name of missionary to the Choctaws for his office to being the Department of Indian Work, which was beneficial to us later, because the federal government was more willing to write to the Department of Indian Work of a church rather than a missionary. But I told him that I was on my way back to school, and I was attending school in Memphis, Tennessee at the time. And I wanted Mr. Gilbert to check to see what all the Termination Act entailed and if there were any things that we could do, no matter what it was, just anything, because I had no idea of, and so he said he would do this, and I went back to school, and this was in 1967. And as you know, in 1968, Martin Luther King was killed in Memphis, Tennessee, where I was attending school, and some of us students at that seminary had joined in the protests for the benefit of the garbage workers, the black garbage workers there in Memphis. And during this time, Martin Luther King came to Memphis and marched one time. And he came back later, and the second trip is when he was assassinated. And shortly after this was in March, in the month of May, Claude Gilbert showed up in Memphis with a trailer to haul my stuff back, and he said, the only thing we can do is to pass petitions, and we'll try to get some senators or congressmen on our side, and so I said, you know, if this is all we can do, we need to do it. And so we came back to McCurtain County and started in the spring of 1968. And we met Mr. Belvin in one of his meetings as he said how well this was going to be. They would have power over their own monies, the Choctaws would, and that they would have a corporation and do many things for the Choctaws, that kind of thing. And he didn't mention that without federal recognition that we would lose hospital care and in any benefits of education, of even the lands we couldn't use in the way we had before. The Wheelock, for example, the Wheelock lands were up for sale during that time. Nobody had bought it, but places like that were up for sale. But the main thing that we worried about was the health care, because we would be losing the Tulalip Hospital and those kinds of things. So we began our petitioning program, and we would travel from town to town and have a community meeting of Choctaws in the towns across the 10-county area. And we would have everybody sign petitions, and other people would take petitions to go out and have signed and send back in to us. And during that year, Oklahomans for Indian Opportunity, an organization started by a lady by the name of Harris, and her husband was a senator, and he was in the process of trying to get nominated for the presidency by the Democratic Party, and his wife happened to be a Comanche Indian. And we thought, you know, this is an opportunity for us to find some person who is willing to do this kind of thing. If he and his wife have sponsored the Oklahomans for Indian Opportunity, they might well help us in this. And so we found a time that Fred Harris was coming to Tulsa in his campaign to be nominated. And we asked some political people here to get for us a little time, which they did. And so we went to Tulsa and waited for our time to speak to Fred Harris. And he met with us. We told him of the Termination Act. He said he'd never heard of it. And We gave him copies of the petitions that we had, and he said that he would look into it and he would get back to us. And within a week, he'd gotten back to us, which was a very big surprise to us, because we didn't really know what to expect. As a matter of fact, we expect the worst. And he said that he would try to get a repeal of that Act, and then in a month's time he called us back and said, on this bill we can place an additional portion to it, and say not only do the Choctaw people not want to be terminated, but they feel that they should be able to elect their chiefs, and so placing that, I don't know what you call that part of the bill, a rider or whatever you call it. And of course we wanted that. And we had not been able to elect, if people know the history, since about 1902. From 1902 and up until that time, as a matter of fact, until 1970, the chiefs were appointed by the President of the United States. So we had a bill that not only was going to repeal the Termination Act, but was also going to allow us to elect the chiefs. But one other thing that he explained to us was this. He said, because the five tribes of eastern Oklahoma, the Cherokees, Chickasaws, Creeks, Seminoles, and Choctaws, they're all under the same umbrella of appointed chiefs and governors. The Chickasaws had a governor, that it would have to include all those persons. And of course, we were glad for that. We were sure that they wanted that, too, because there had been a time in the early 1940s and in the 1930s that the Choctaws were fighting very hard to get the right to elect their chiefs, and nothing ever came of it. And so the president by now was Richard Nixon. And Richard Nixon, when the bill came before him to repeal the termination and to allow the five tribes to elect their headmen, he signed it into law. So we know how Richard Nixon is looked at because of the Watergate, but for us, he's a pretty good old fella. He did some other things that for Indians too during that time. If people recall, he gave back a religious lake to the Taos Indians in New Mexico, which they'd been trying to get for I don't know how many years, 80 or 90 years, and weren't able to get it back. And he signed into law a bill that allowed them. So he was good to Indians. So by 1970, we were going to be able to elect our chiefs. And when I look back, I think back to the time that my mother was saying that I could do something about it, and I'm amazed that we were able to do something about it. It's still when I think about it or talk about it, it's still a shock to my system to think that three people, a white man who was Claude Gilbert was a white man. And a man named Joe Lewis, who had just retired from the Air Force, living in my hometown of Wright City, and myself would be able to, just by petitions to communities and other Indian tribal people, would be able to cause this to come about. To me, it's a miracle. But I really appreciate having been a part of that movement, and I think, of course, there are a lot of little things that go on in here. But I think this would be as much as I would want to say tonight. You know, The Choctaw Termination Act was repealed on August 24, 1970. And I can remember that pretty easy because I was married to my wife on August 23, 1963. And so that keeps that date in my mind, August 24, 1970. So that's all I have really say. And incidentally, the former Senator Harris, who didn't get nominated, we owe a great deal of thanks to him and to his wife, because she said that she's the one that used the petitions and worked with Senator Harris in contacting the people in the Senate and in the House. But that's my story, though. And Senator Harris is still living. That's one thing I need. His wife of that time, she isn't. And LaDonna Harris was her name. Am I still on, or where am I?
You been there?
Oh, I see Ben.
What happened with Ben? I think he was messing with it. Just
keep talking. I'll see if I can hear you. Ben, are you still there with me? Some of the things that I've left out is, you know, the confrontations that we had with Mr. Belvin and some of these community meetings. Mr. Belvin was a very colorful man. I can remember in Tullahena, I went there to set things up, and I went to the newspaper in Tullahena and talked to the editor, and he said, on these meetings, is Mr. Belvin, the Chief Belvin, bless these meetings? And I said, well, really, no, he's very much against what we're doing. And so when he wrote up the little article for our meeting, he said, Randy Jacobs said that Chief Belvin had not blessed their meetings. Well, when Mr. Belvin showed up that night, he had five or six CHR workers with him, community health representatives. And when he came into the place, we were already starting, but he said very, very loudly, he says, I'm here to bless this meeting. And so we had a lot of, well, some were not as, well, that wasn't a funny one either. That particular statement was funny, but we were very confrontational toward one another in those meetings, and talking about what the Termination Act was going to rob the people of. And Mr. Velden, of course, was saying that's untrue, that kind of thing. Well, actually, he wasn't saying that was untrue. He said, you're a bunch of liars, he would say.
Can you hear
Ben? No, not yet.
He got booted off. He's trying to get back on.
Oh.
He's trying to get back in.
Okay. Can I just end then?
A couple minutes.
All right. All right. We still have in the Choctaw Nation people who remember passing petitions. I can remember that the assistant chief now was telling me that a Choctaw from the Poto area was saying that they had fought against the Termination Act, and I was asking who it was, and he said, well, it was Delton Cox, the representative there. He said he was a person who passed petitions against the Termination Act. And of course, we didn't know most of the people who were passing petitions, because we'd be there one night and we would be gone. and they would send their petitions in to us at an Ida Bell box number here. But later on, after everything was over, then we would be visiting in, let's say, Atoka, and stop at a restaurant. We'd be sitting there, and somebody would recognize us and come in and tell us that they had been some of the persons who were passing petitions during that time, and that was always good to get to know people that way. As I said a while ago, we were able to get the vote back in that time, but that's all we had. Later on, we had to sue the federal government for the right to have our Constitution recognized. And so the Constitution that we have was an updating of the 1860 Constitution. And we were allowed to sue the federal government, and that's what has to happen. The federal government has to allow you to sue them. So we went to the Supreme Court. There were 12 of us, as I remember. We won our case. And so the Supreme Court said the Constitution had to be updated. For example, women weren't allowed to vote in the elections in 1860. And so that would have to be corrected, and those kinds of things. But in the meantime, we had a chief by the name of Hollis Roberts who wanted to place the power of the tribe in the office of the chief. And so he offered two of our people, the people who would Hello?
Let me hear those words back up.
I think this is Mrs. Carnes. Mr. Carnes is having some technical difficulties. Let me see if he's texting. And Randy said if we can't finish this, that he will come on another time. I'm going to sign out here, guys, because I don't know how to do this stuff, but I'll see you on the chat.
Hello. I'm just trying to see if anybody can hear me, so I'm looking at the chat. And I know we've got a little bit of a delay that comes through. Okay, let me see if I can hear. So the speakers still aren't working, or neither is my mic. And it's a Windows 8, and I don't really know how to use it all just yet. Okay. Sorry about that, but it was a matter of time before we had those kind of technical difficulties. So I had to bypass my computer, and I'm calling in through my cell phone. And I don't know, maybe Randy can call back in, and we can continue this discussion and pick up where we left off. Let's see. Well, somebody's down hold, and let me go ahead and... It's a prefix of 272. Okay, you're live now. Now, who's calling? Hello?
Hello.
Okay, okay. Yeah, who's this?
It's Chuck. I'm calling in, listening.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Except we just had a little bit of problem with my computer. I couldn't hear nothing. Nobody could hear me. And I'd seen somebody was on there, so I thought, let me get you on. But you're on now. What did you think about some of the things Randy had shared?
Yeah, I didn't know you could hear me. I thought I was just listening.
Oh, you're on air now.
Oh, okay. It said press 1 to talk to the host, and I was, and then it said just, or don't press anything, you listen. I thought I'll just be, on there. And just, I didn't know, when you said hello, I was like, I wonder if you can hear me. And then, so I didn't know you can hear me. I was just listening.
Okay. Well, see, I think I got Randy back on, so we'll go ahead and continue this discussion. And I think maybe at some point, I'd like to have you come on and talk about things that are going on in your perspective of either the issues and where we're at in this world. Be good to have the other voices besides Bone.
Oh, yeah.
We'll touch base later, so let me try and get Randy back on.
All right, cool.
Hello.
Hello, Randy. You back on?
Yes, this is Randy.
Hey. Yeah. Well, this thing with technology is always not so reliable. And when you got through talking, I was getting ready to tell you that some of the people in the chat wanted to thank you for what you have done, and somebody had some questions, and I was over trying to troubleshoot this computer the way I could, so the only thing I could do was restart my whole computer.
Yeah.
And even then, the microphone and the speakers weren't working, so I had to use my cell phone and call in. But I'm glad that you got to share a little bit about that.
Did you get of what I said? Do you know yet?
I listened to everything that you were saying all the way to the end, and when you were done, I was trying to talk, and I wasn't coming through, so I started trying to troubleshoot and figure it out, and I thought, well, let me see if this song would play, so I clicked on it, and I couldn't hear the song. Well, I knew I had problems with anybody else in here, but I couldn't.
Well,
okay.
If there are questions, I'd be glad to come back later, you know, a couple of weeks, a month from now.
We'll always be glad to have you on. And let me see. Okay, let me see if anybody's got any questions in the chat room.
All right.
Okay, got somebody's gonna be calling in, so let me put some other tab.
All right.
Okay. And I believe this is his, so Bobby Craig is listening in. Okay, let me check. I think that was the other guy, so let me keep eyeing, check another number pops up. Days I'll get somebody who's got some time to work on this, because there's the ability to have somebody take the calls and screens, kind of screen
yes.
it, but they can let me know who's online and get everything ready. And then
yes.
I believe this is our next person. Hey, Phil, come and check my house.
How's it going?
There you go. Yeah, you're live.
I'm live.
What's that?
You hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. Alito, is this Randy?
Yes, it is. It's Randy.
Randy, this is Yana Scott.
Uh-huh.
Chokma.
I'm Chokma.
Oh, man. Yeah, I was wondering, how do you feel the progression for the tribe has come since the days you were fighting termination? You feel, because personally, my personal viewpoint is that we've come a long way, but we've sort of devolved into an internalized oppression going on amongst ourselves within the new tribal government. And I was just curious as to how you feel the government has evolved. Is it what you envisioned when you and Claude and Jasper Scott and all them sat around and started talking about all what you had in mind for the people?
No, it hasn't. We had a vision that was clouded by the fact that we thought that Choctaws were as honorable as they were back in the 1800s. Even though we had rascals here and there, they weren't able to place their will on the Choctaw people very often. Well, there were times it happened really badly, but most of the time it didn't. And we expected that kind of thing. And once we had the right to elect and those kinds of things, we were surprised at the number of Choctaw people who were willing to shaft their own people. Mm. And one of the things that happened was when we were updating the Constitution, those who wanted the power of the government to be in the hands of the people lost out. And they lost out to those who wanted the power of the Choctaw Nation to be in the office of the chief, and it's turned out very badly for us. And I think the description of an internal oppression is a good one, because that's what it does. I look at the businesses and they look like they're doing really well. Of course, you can't check them or anything, but they look like they're doing really well. But so far as the way we treat one another, that is the, our tribal government treats those of us out here, it's not a good thing. I'll name a real small thing, and it indicates what's happened. The Choctaw Nation has taken Choctaw monies, and they've produced a really beautiful picture book of things that the Choctaw Nation are doing. I'm not even remembering what the name of it is, but you can get it at your public library. And as you go through here, there's a section of the artists of the Choctaws. And among those artists, the person who is not pictured in here is the lady artist Norma Howard. And when I looked in there, and she wasn't there because she does basic Choctaw themes. She doesn't do anything but that. And she's a wonderful artist. She's won all kinds of awards, all of that. But evidently, she's made somebody mad because her picture was not there. And little things like that are just, it's childish. It's like a bunch of first and second, third graders saying, let's don't talk to her. And they do it by pulling stuff like this. Anyway, my point is that kind of punishing, and it's not a really bad one, because I'm sure her feelings were hurt, but she's a big person and won't let that turn her around from her talents and her contributing toward the art world from a Choctaw point of view.
Right.
But it's silly. Our tribal government has become a silly group. And it makes me feel bad because I love being Choctaw, but I don't like that kind of treatment that we give to one another and from our highest officials against just regular citizens, and you know what I'm talking about, I think.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Randy, I had recently made a trip over to Tuskahoma for the stickball games, and I kind of have avoided Tuskahoma for a long time because it's become a monstrosity, really. And I think if you remember back in the early 80s, I can remember that far back anyway. We used to have that old brush arbor out there on the side of the Capitol building, and, had all night singings, but really all you ever saw out there were our people. And
yes.
We all knew each other, and we all sang together, and, our people all knew each other. And now we've become such a diluted tribe that nobody knows each other. And I know that we were raised a certain way, but I think we've gotten away from that because our ways and our cultures, we're now being paraded around for the pleasure and leisure of the government, even now that they gather up Choctaws and send them over to the Smithsonian. It's like they used to be back in the old Wild West days, the old Wild West show, and I feel like we're a commodity. We're not a people anymore. And I was just wondering what your thoughts were on your vision and what it's become now. And I can see that it's become perverted a little bit.
Yeah, well, my vision is that one day one of your children or one of your grandchildren or one of mine, they're going to rise up and change this Constitution. There'll be a person who's willing to put the power back into the hands of the people, and there will be that kind of appreciation for one another that needs to be I guess I know that I idealized the past, and it wasn't perfect, but there in a communal society where people had to depend on each other. To me, it was much better. I think back to one of the chiefs of the Cherokees who came and he was talking about when we got the election and he was elected, and he came and he was talking to all of the tribes, and he said, you know, we feel like in 100 years from now, we can be back where we were 100 years ago. And I knew what he was talking about, that kind of appreciation for each other would be allowed. And when I say allowed, it's allowed, but it's not pushed far nowadays. As a matter of fact, we have so much of this punishing Choctaws for not voting like the officials at our headquarters wants us to vote kinds of things. And we're always saying, you know, there's no reason to run a chief because we're not allowed to have a fair election. And so consequently, we haven't had anybody running for chief within the last two terms of office. And it's not because we feel like the present chief is so popular. It's because people say it's not a fair election. There's no way you can win. And that's bad. That shouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I appreciate your thoughts on that, Randy. And I won't take up too much more of y'all's time. I listened to what you said, and I remember you guys sitting around with my grandpa and talking about the way it should be, and I just figured I would talk to you about what it's become, and I appreciate the time on that. It means a lot to you, Randy.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's one of the things about doing a show is having a chance for a lot of us to get a chance to, you know, hear our stories and have a chance to talk and discuss, you know, what had happened here. Because, you know, when you were talking about when this termination period started in 1959, you know, for me, I just find it ironic that was the year that I was born.
Oh, I see.
The year I was born, they were talking about terminating me. And then right about the time you got these things changed with Nixon, then I also was kind of born into my Native identity in 1972. That was when they went to the Bureau of Indian Affairs building during the Trail of Broken Treaties, and in another betrayal by the federal government, they chose to, you know, occupy the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which only happened after the cops first hit on them. So they went there.
Yes.
And were demanding to have their meetings, and when the cops come and try to push them out, then that's when the occupation took place.
Yes.
And it's also kind of ironic that that's the only federal building in Washington, D.C. that was ever taken over. And it was taken over by Indian people by the BIA, which was originally in the Department of Interior, that was previously the Indian Department, and originated within the War Department. There's many interaction with Native people in the 1800s was through the War Department. A lot of our people were basically considered prisoners of war because Oklahoma is home to the Wichitas, Caddos, and Wacos, and now we have up to 40 fairly recognized nations that are there, which in a sense tells me that this was our place of exile, Indian territory. And when we came here, we were told that we would never be made into a state or part of the Union. And we know that betrayal happened to us again. And it's always constant. And what I feel like is, you know, we do
you know, the term is decolonization. You know, we need to, you know, free our minds to look at what has happened to our people over the generations, over the last couple of centuries, and see if we can find ways to reawaken our people. And when I went to Tuscaloosa, I went to go, you know, find a place to set up a camp. And I had roped it off, and I realized I didn't have cardboard or Sharpie or marker. So I went to one of the houses for the caretakers, and I asked them for that, and they gave it to me, and we sat there and talked. And they told me how, you know, I guess some pressure was made on our director, and she gave authorization to allow people to start setting up signs a day early. And that upset a lot of people. And we talked a little bit more about stuff, and I just had to mention the Sunday, and she literally took two steps back and said, oh, no, I'm not with that. I don't believe that you can worship a sun god. You know, the Bible says, that's what, first of all, there is no sun god. I said, the sun is created by the Creator. And it's this gift that gives us a lot of day in our lives every morning. It is this gift that grows our plants or food. It is this gift that keeps us all alive. I said, you know, everything is manifested by the Creator and it comes through Him. So we're not praying to the sun. We're giving thanks and doing what was taught. So, you know, automatically it was the reaction that we have Indian people who are so turned off on our traditional ways that, you know, they become Americans. And it's so sad that many of our people have become the worst Indian fighters that we could have of this day and time. And I feel like, you know, bringing back tradition, having more of our people speak our language, and like, you know, Giannis, he has the Chantanupa Preservation Society. This is something he does on his own to help, you know, keep his language going and keep his language alive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
yeah.
Efforts by him, independent efforts that I think it has prompted Powell and the peace to encourage employees and everyone to, you know, start greeting people by saying hello. I think eventually they'll learn to say hello. They haven't learned how to say it like they mean it. It's like they're embarrassed in speaking the language. But that's how far removed we are. And they have to understand that it is because they have no connection to being native. You know, they got the blood degree. They may be half blood, they may be a full blood. But they have lost that connection. They have lost philosophical belief. Not taking more than you need. Not taking care of the people in your community. If they were to come from that, we would have a very strong possible nation. Because earlier when my computer packed up, I had a bunch of tabs set up, some information I was collecting. And I took one was from 2001. Nation operating 5,000. Your budget at time was 306 and 0.5 million. And I think if the population is 10,000. 12. We recall that we had 5,000 to 7,000 employees. Almost half were native. Our budget, annual budget, was $1 billion, and we had a population of over. And so, you know, our employee hasn't changed. Our membership has almost annual income has basically tripled. And to me, I think that is one of the problems that when lots of money comes in, people become even more corrupt. The Constitution was made, more people became power hungry. And that money's coming in, they're money hungry. So power and money, that quest, is going the rest of the people here. Okay, just 1 second, Dan. You got that. Good question. From the chat. Over the past 30 years, there have been many groups, Choctaws Against Self-Determination, Choctaws Against Self-Termination, Choctaws for Democracy, Native Women for Justice, CFFER, and the latest Choctaw Voting Bloc. Why have these failed? That's a question from Bob Burleson to you.
Oh, the groups that have failed?
Yeah.
Well, there's something going on two places. One is there are those of us who have just sort of given up and saying you can't fight City Hall. And the other is that the other group of us says, well, we're not so bad off. We're much better off than we were before we couldn't elect, so let's not rock the boat. And there's probably a third group of those who have jobs, and if you want to keep your job, you don't bring up anything like this. And to me, somebody's going to have to, and a lot of us are going to have to start saying we need to change our Constitution. We need to have more love shown by our tribe. We're a small group of people. If our population is over 100,000 or 150,000, you know, we wouldn't make a large city in places in this United States. We need to begin to have the kind of Choctaw love for one another that has existed when we were at our best. And that's the kind of thing that I look forward to. That's why I was telling Janosch that maybe one of his grandchildren, one of my grandchildren, are going to rise up one day and become chief and let these things change over and let the people be themselves and not be punished for not agreeing with the top officials.
I remember Choctaw for Democracy. I had, News Scott Morrison. We were neighbors, and we had a lot of discussions about what was going on within the Choctaw Nation. And, basically, it always comes to corruption. And even before Scott Morrison, I don't remember the group, but there was a woman who was like a second, third cousin. She had collected a lot of information, documentation about the corruption within the Choctaw Nation and Hollis Roberts was chief. And she had went and contacted a reporter or maybe somebody from the Justice Department, and they were to have a meeting. And she was on her way home one evening, and somebody ran her car off the road. By the time she got out of the ditch and, got home, somebody had broken into her house, and all the papers and documents she had was gone. So she quit fighting. Scott Morrison and several other people, if these guys listen, I'd like to know if they maybe call in and tell us more about that story. But there are folks not pamphlets, brochures, that talked about for democracy. And they were arrested, and I believe the official charge was treason. And so they spent a lot of time in court going over this. This other group, the Choctaw Voting Bloc, I don't think it has failed yet, but I do know that the person who ran that site has been threatened and has been threatened with death.
Oh, me.
And so this is what this all it works, There's a lot of money that's going through top management, administrative position. There's a lot of benefits and favors that's going there. And these people are going to protect that. And they'll do whatever is necessary to be. But for the most part, a lot of people who don't get into politics because they figure they'll take care of it, and they see them as good people. They don't know anything about these other things. And people in general, when you try to explain these types of behaviors, they don't want to believe it. They don't want to believe that the United States president was engaged in assassinating children, to people who attacked September 11th. Some people try to believe it, but, you know, it's hard to know what to believe. People have to engage with our child's government. And you said it earlier, you know, it should be power of the people. But they got that stuff. Now, myself, I do believe that it can happen. Make some out of our nation. I know one of the issues that has come up, like in a recent election in Durant, was that there is no access to the voter registration list.
Mm-hmm.
And the absentee ballot that we have comes from out of state. And those local votes are in support of the new candidate. The incumbent remains in office because of all these absentee votes. I've always wondered how my mom has voted since she passed away. And my dad.
Yes.
And if my brother's voting, and he passed away a couple of years ago. So, you know, they don't let us know these things. We want to check and verify that if they're taken off the road, they haven't done it. So, we've got the ballots to be sent to the last known address, and if it gets returned, then somebody signs off on them and puts them in, they're counted as a vote. So, you know, what do you think? Should be a solution to address all these issues.
Well, the real solution is that we straighten up as a Choctaw Nation and not stoop to cheating one another. So far as stopping the cheating, somebody's got to come along, and I just know that I have a great confidence that God will allow that to happen, as he did in allowing the stopping of the Termination Act, which couldn't have been done by the people that did it. It couldn't have been done. That somebody will come along who shouldn't be able to do it, and they'll change this over and make it to be a right kind of government with, like I say, with a dignity given to one another. I don't see any other kind of solution coming. I don't think people will just voluntarily say I'm going to make things right. I think they have to be made to do it. And but I know it can be done. I've seen it before, and it's happened in this world many times. I'm sure that when Martin Luther King went out the first time, people were saying, you can't do anything, you can't fight City Hall. And we have to have that kind of courage as a people. Have a love for each other.
Yeah, I know you're not on the chat, and everything Bob has, you know, said that the thing is, folks like Randy who remember how we are dying off, and new generations do not know what it means to be talked off. Talk to us about some of this before, and I said, you know, first of all, I'm not knocking the business ship and the skills they employ to make the Choctaw Nation as well off as it has been. But the issues I have is the type of services they provide to the people and the things they support and sponsor. I believe I heard it or read it recently how they donated $1 million to the Carnegie Institute. They donated $1 million to Southern State University for a program to supposedly great tribal leaders, you know, it's based on political science, maybe American political science class. But I think all they're doing is further brainwashing the people. They're agreeing with it's something that we have to do for ourselves. You know, another point that Bob brought up is we can't expect someone to rise up in the community if they do not know what a Tulpa community is. Well, I could, you know, you could probably explain it better than most, but I feel like there are still small pockets of Tulpa community in the present in Oklahoma. What do you think?
Well, I think they're few and far between, and like I say, there are some who just feel like, what's the use? You can't fight City Hall, and but there are individuals who are going to keep this hope alive that there'll be a change for us, and that's the way it has to be. People like you who you're trying to do something, This is where my hope is in people who rise up and say, well, I can't do everything, but I can do something, and I'm going to do something, and they do this little thing, and something that spark is going to cause something to happen along the way. I don't know when or where. I pray that it comes soon, but it may not, but it'll come though.
I believe it will too. You know, the biggest example I can give is when I was in prison in the 1980s. You know, I was still very angry. And 1982, I was doing 90 days in solitary on a unit, you know, everybody called the Rock. Basically, a prison within a prison. And there I began to learn how to do legal research. And I started finding out as Native prisoners we had our rights in there for our spirituality. And that was enough to have caused me to study and research. I got a job in a prison law library, so I had 12, 13 hours a day to do all the reading. I got hired on as a legal research assistant. And by 1985, we had a rebellion at the state prison in McAllister, Oklahoma. And we went on lockdown afterwards like we usually do, but the only thing different was they never let it back up. We remained locked down. And within a month, we had a case manager, guards, and other employees telling us that they're going to start making everybody cut their hair. And they said, you're Indian. They can't make you cut their hair. And to me, it was all rumors at that time. But then an employee provided me with a copy of the Oklahoma State Penitentiary Plan of Action, in which the Grooming Code was a component of this policy. So I started a lawsuit. And eventually got it certified as a class action. They couldn't cut nobody's hair because we had that restraining order against the Department of Corrections. And what ultimately ended up happening is we forced the Department of Corrections to acknowledge that wearing our hair long is a religious practice. But the courts had a rule against us, and the prison officials had tried to make an attempt to accommodate our beliefs, although the court felt they could do this in a better format. And he would hope and encourage that they do so. So, you know, only the recourse we had was appeal to the state Supreme Court. And about that time, case manager starts saying, well, your pro date's coming up. And you need to fill out all this information. I said, well, I'm not going after pro rules. Why not? I said, I got to keep this case going. Well, you're not going to take the pro, so you can stay in prison. I said, I have to stay. But if I go, this case will die, because a lot of the other guys who had restraining orders, they were intimidated. Promised transfer to Mean Street prison, promised job. And if they didn't, they would remain in that cell for another year or two, and they wouldn't be going nowhere. But some of these guys were coerced into cutting their hair, and they got transferred out, and they started shooting Indians out left and right to be able to cut their hair. And I knew if I left, there was nobody to pick up his lawsuit. So I chose to stay in prison, keep this case going. And then went off about 2.5-3 years. That time is, you know, after the state support, the decision was to be cut down. But a couple of my friends had talked to me and said, going in spot for pro. So I went to my case manager and said, I'm ready to go for pro. She goes, are you still here? I go, yes. She literally took it. A lot of stuff off the desk, moved to the side, grabbed the form, filled it out, count time came. She said, stay here, I'll get you clear. She called it in where I was. And she said, I'm on the phone. And took my paper off the phone. And sent me. You know, I believed in what I was doing. I had other inmates tell me, you're not going to make a difference. You make it harder for us. Why are you off the boat? And he ended up that side telling me the same thing. You know, I have to do that. I made that sacrifice, you know, to keep my system, you know, help out my relatives. You know, it is what we have got to do. I don't want to hear why you can't do it. You know, if you can tell me why I can't do it, okay, explain to me why not, and offer me a solution to get it done. It's always a solution. But in your time, we've got to find something very important. The sacrifices that have to be made. So I sacrificed 2 years of my life to stand up for these brothers. Our need for God. Christians got to have their crosses. They got to have their Bibles. They could have anything they could need. But if any Native people I really choose a smoking sage that is going to get us high like marijuana. You know, they ridiculed our ways. You know, some of you guys that had restraining order, I understand about exemption. In 30 days, they can't tell them, well, you need to do your exemption to get expired. And there was no such thing as expired. But they knocked the guys down, put them in chains, handcuffed them, and shaved their head, put them in a hole. This is what I was fighting against. And what's happening with the Choctaw Nations even more? I've reached out to Dakota. It has been just as bad. People are dying left and right. People had to make a stand. But that is what we are going to do. We are going to make a stand. But we're going to do it intelligently because that is the gift that my Creator gives, to give intelligence. If we do this in the right way with prayer and a good heart, you know, we will win. There's nothing stronger than prayer. Whether it's a Christian prayer, Buddhist prayer, a traditional prayer, if that comes from the heart in a good way, it will happen. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah, that's the way it happens. Somewhere somebody's touched and they see and they give it a try, and that's the way it's happened over and over again.
Okay, Randy, I believe I've got a couple of callers here waiting. I got one with area code 828, so let me get them on and see what they had to say. We have about 22 minutes left in this program.
Hi, Dan.
Hello, how you doing?
And Randy, this is Heather Holt, your Facebook friend.
Okay, good to hear from you.
And Eugene Redshirt. Yeah, really
okay,
good.
Do you have any questions for Randy?
Yes, I just would like to say.
Okay, I think my phone is
a little while. Oh, but I'm glad we said get on there. They're on now. And I want you to know that I think you're
It seems like myself, I'm having issues with audio and stuff. You're kind of like cutting in and out on me, so it's probably my phone or something. And so
I'm
sure
sorry.
It's okay.
Can you hear me now?
Okay, now I can hear. Like I said, I think it's my phone or something.
It might be mine. I have bad reception. But your analogy, Randy, of Dr. Martin Luther King was spot on.
Yes, I think my main feeling was that this is the way things work. Somebody has to stand up, and it's always somebody that the world doesn't expect to. And I feel like God allows those people to show up. I don't know when they show up, but I know they've always been there. There's always been somebody. And I look forward to that time when those things that we feel should happen with us as a people, that I want us to have that love for one another and showing each other dignity. The people that don't agree with us, that we honor them too, you know. And I feel like that's not happening. I think if somebody looks like they're going against what the higher-ups want, they get fired. And I know that's true because I've seen it in the papers in the past. And I don't think that's good, and I don't think it's right. But a time will come when these things will be changed. Maybe not perfect. I don't think that'll ever happen, but it'll be better. But I look forward to that.
Yes. Yeah. They say that Dr. Martin Luther King went up with just a few words, but the Spirit intervened. That great message, and believe, like you do, that the same thing can happen for the Choctaw.
I pray for that day. Yes, I pray for that day to come.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate the understanding that I hear in what you've said too, and those are the kinds of things that's going to touch the hearts of those who don't realize that these even need to be done, but they need to be done.
Well, we appreciate you guys, and Eugene Redshirt would like to say something.
I mean, it's nice to hear wise ones, older ones coming out and telling your generation on how to organize them. Ones below them. My life, and the problem there, people think it's alcoholism, it's poverty. It's not. It's causing the problems. That's government. That's how I've always viewed them. But that govern it.
I think, Eugene, that you know, we have a lot of different problems.
Yes.
And each problem is going to need somebody to help us through. And the one where we have a regard for one another, because the laws of governments call us to deal with one another in a certain way, and laws that are made to hold some people down, or in our case, to hold powerful people up. Because like I said a while ago, I appreciate the businesses that are going on. I appreciate the way the hospital works. I know it's not perfect, and sometimes we gripe about it, but it is the best we've ever had. And our clinics, we have more clinics than we ever had, and I appreciate those. But I want everybody to have a say and to be listened to, and that we honor one another again.
Yeah. That's good. That's key. The key there to understanding. Hear one another and getting things done. And that's how the old timers did it. We sit here, my generation and previous generations, they all say, look up the Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull and all these old chiefs. They don't even practice the way that they have done it.
Yeah, I feel like that's the problem for us, for our chiefs to say the one who needs the help the most ought to get the most help.
Yeah.
And that we have a sacrificing attitude because we are leaders. And our sacrificial living will be for those who are in most need,
mm-hmm.
rather than lining our pockets or whatever kind of attitude that is prevalent right now.
Yeah.
Okay, we have somebody else that's been on hold for about 15 minutes. So I want to give them a chance to come on and share some words. And if I'm kind of interrupting, I have to apologize, Eugene, because you say it's cutting out really bad. And sometimes I don't hear anything, so I didn't mean to interrupt if you were talking at that time.
Thank you, Ben, and love to you and Kitty.
Okay, and hope to hear from you guys again soon.
Thanks. All right, thank you, Randy.
Yes, thank you. Appreciate
and blessings.
Appreciate you and Eugene's thoughts.
Yes.
Yes. It's good to hear from you.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you. Okay, our next caller is 580. Yeah, you're live. Been waiting.
Hey, Ben and Randy. This is Bob Burleson.
Hey, Bob. Good to have you on.
Hey. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, good deal. I was wanting to follow up on my question on the internet to Randy about why all these groups failed and stuff. You know, Randy knows I'm one of the four that were convicted of treason in Choctaw Court, so I'm kind of got a long history of trying to fight for exactly what Randy's fought for. And been a little less effective than he has, but I wanted to make a point about community and that the fact that we don't really have a coherent Choctaw community anymore. You know, you mentioned places down there in far southeast Oklahoma, they have a pretty good Choctaw population, but I know I go down to Smithville or places like that, and you can throw a stone pretty far before you hit a Choctaw anymore. It's a lot less than it used to be, and I remember a story you told me one time that I've thought a lot about, and it's about actually one of the other callers' grandfather, and it was a story about Choctaw storytellers, you know, not like Tim Tingle, but actual ones who told our history, and I remember you mentioned you talked to one, is his grandfather, and and talked to him about the stories and said, well, why don't you just record all these, you know, write them down or record them or something so more people can hear it. And he said, well, he said, you know, if it's important enough to you to hear it, you'll come to me and listen. And I think the point about that was that we have to make certain things important in our life, and being Choctaw has become a lot less important than it was before because we don't have the coherent community where we all took care of each other and watched after each other and ran around with each other that we used to. We shared dinners and you know, language and all that kind of thing. We don't really have that like we had before. And I don't see someone rising up to unite us until we try to kind of turn our hearts and unite ourselves again, that we make Choctaw something that's different and is special and means something to us. We have to prepare our hearts. You know, our Creator who created our ancestors and created all mankind, his arm isn't shortened. He still is as powerful as he was at the time of creation even before. And I realize he can, by himself, put somebody down here to unite us and to make things better. But on the other coin, if we don't prepare our hearts for that, I don't see the change happening. And that's what I'm really concerned about, is that we don't put enough importance on being a community and being people who meet together and eat together and talk together and play together and grow together as we did before. And it's because we move away from each other. It's because, you know, we just don't see each other. We have so many other things outside that we turn to that interfere with that. So I was wondering what you think on that, and I'll let you get back to talking because I always love hearing you talk.
Well, thank you. You made me sit here and think about Jasper Scott and mentioning that. I'm really pleased to have somebody remember that he did say. He said to me when I said to him, I can get some people ready, and you can come over to McCurtain County. We were, of course, meeting in Atoka County and I was the only person sitting there talking to him, and I said, you know, there's nobody here, and he said, yes, there is. He said, you're here. And you're right. The heart of somebody has to awaken. Somebody has to be here, even if it's one person. And so I would say to you, you're here, Bob. You're still there, and I'm so pleased that you're still there. And to me, I'm assuming that the prayers that go up from you concerning these things are like they were when I used to see you all the time, and Ben's prayers are along these lines concerning this Choctaw Nation problem of what our leaders are aiming at and we want them to aim at. I would be like Jasper Scott and say, Bob, you're here.
Well, I don't know for how long. You know, we talk about how people have to sacrifice, and they do. I worry about these young ones that are coming at now and trying to make things better. I know myself, you know, I was informed. I've been trying to get back down to Tallahena and work. You know, that's the whole reason I got into medicine was to work down there. But I was informed that the tribe says that because of my past relationship with the tribe that I could not be hired there.
That's right.
And so,
and that's one of the problems.
It's still that same, like you said, childishness. After 30 years, they're going to punish me. But that's what happens, and people need to be aware that still does go on. It's sad and it's foolish, but that's life down here.
Yes, and probably the worst thing is a lot of people realize that.
Yeah.
But they won't try to do anything about it because they don't want to be blackballed also,
yeah,
along with you. They and that kind of fear is not worthy of us.
Right.
That kind of
fear.
Yeah,
you know, the thing is, we have to prepare our hearts. Is the thing. Now, I've given up on the politics. Because really, the what goes on down there isn't. It's got our name, but it's not us. It never was ours. It's something that's foreign from us ever since, you know, the end of the nation. And I think that the answer now is reviving our culture and our beliefs, our language. You know, those are the things that I concentrate on now. I think those are more important than sometimes some of the political struggles that we try to do now, because we're fighting in their playing field. We're not fighting in our playing field, and until we can have that group of people who can get incited and rise up, until we have that group of people, nothing happens, and we don't have that group. We have to work on developing that core group of Choctaws. You know, that's what we need to have. I think that's why all those other groups failed, because they appealed to a group that wasn't united, and people tended to just kind of let whoever's running it do the work and never really owned the whole idea, and it kind of just would fall through after, you know, a few months or a few years. And until we get our hearts right, I don't see a big change.
No, it's not coming now. I don't see it either. I agree with you that,
yeah.
But we do have people who are concerned. They're very few, it looks like.
Yeah.
But they are there.
Yeah.
And I think somewhere out there in the darkness where you can't see the lines, it means something.
Right.
And I'm glad to see that one of those that's still there is you, and I think of others right now that I could name, and they're there, and I'm just sure that, but I don't know when it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's up to God. You know, that's up to God when the time is right. We just have to prepare ourselves for it. But it's good to talk to you again. I'll get off here.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it's good to hear your voice again.
Okay. Bye.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for coming on, Bob. Well, Randy, I'm glad that you got to come on the show. We're down to about 2 minutes and 40 seconds left.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for having me. I've been made very, very happy inside myself to hear the ones who've voiced what they thought, and it looks good to me that we do have folks out there and old timers like Bob who are still there. And it's good to be with you, Ben. And, hopefully we can do this again.
Well, I look forward to it. So, and also to your wife, I said thanks for letting us borrow you for a while. I know she's waiting for you.
Okay. Well, good night. God bless you.
Good night. Okay, so we're down to about 90 seconds, and you know, I do want to thank everybody for, you know, tuning in tonight. Hanging in there while we have our technical difficulties, but fortunately my computer started working all of a sudden. But I guess, you know, with what time we have left, keep a lookout. We may have a special show next September 12th. It's David Leonard Pelter's birthday, and I'm going to see if David Hill and a few others will come on and we'll talk about that. Something I want to mention real briefly, you know, I got people who don't care for me or like me very much, but, you know, I've just been made aware today that some people have been going around trying to discourage people from listening to the show, And what kind of person would do that? You know, I'd expect that from the FBI, from provocateurs, from white supremacists. This story Randy shared is very important. So when you hear people that bad-mouthing others, you know, think about it. What is their goal? What is their intention? Because Randy had a very important story to share. So, you know, keep that in mind. And I know we're doing good, and we're going to keep growing. So we got to remember that. So, again, I want to thank everybody for tuning in. And be on the lookout for our show next week. So until then, everybody take care, be good to yourselves, and we'll see you.